It's my pleasure to be here today to present our research on this important topic. It's entitled Correlates of Vitamin D Deficiency in a Multiracial Adolescent Population. We use data from NHANES 3, 1988 through 1994. I have no relations to disclose. I have relationships, but no relationships. I have relationships, but no relationships. Sorry. So during my presentation, I'll provide a brief background, an overview of our study design and methods. I'll offer our results, conclusions, and if there's some time, I'd like to offer some new data that we just recently analyzed and leave time for discussion. So vitamin D is necessary for bone metabolism, and throughout our lifespan, it plays a role in many physiologic functions, including insulin production, blood pressure, our immune function, and cell growth. There's evidence that vitamin D may play a role in many chronic diseases, including heart disease, hypertension, and cardiac disease as well. However, there are few dietary sources, and there are many factors that increase, interfere with cutaneous production, including decreased dietary intake and decreased sun exposure. The prevalence is estimated to be 15 to 80% in various subpopulations, but that is dependent on how deficiency is defined. So the traditional cutoff used to define deficiency in pediatrics is a serum 25-OHD level of 11 nanograms per milliliter. Last year, over 300 scientists gathered in British Columbia and collectively determined that the minimum level should be at least 20. The optimal level is thought to be higher than that, possibly as high as 30 to 35 nanograms per milliliter, and this evidence is based on research that's been performed in adults in fracture prevention studies and in parathyroid hormone response data. This particular guidelines emphasize fortification of foods and or vitamin supplements. They didn't recommend any increased sun exposure in order to minimize the risk of increased skin cancer. And basically, they agree that up to 2,000 international units per day of vitamin D is considered safe as per the Institute of Medicine. So we embarked on this research because national prevalence estimates are currently unavailable. Most studies utilize raw BMI to explore the relationship between vitamin D and obesity, but this is inappropriate in the pediatric population. And finally, we wanted to develop a model which included the relevant predictors of vitamin D deficiency and include potential confounders. The data we use come from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, 1988 through 1994, and NHANES is a periodic survey conducted by the National Center for Health Statistics. It contains survey data, physical exam data, laboratory data. It oversamples minorities, low-income individuals, and those over age 60. This was a cross-sectional study, and the sample was limited to adolescents aged 12 through 19, with available serum vitamin D levels. The study variables that we included were an outcome of vitamin D deficiency. We used two cut points. We used the current traditional cut point of less than 11 nanograms per milliliter, and also the recommendation of less than 20 nanograms per milliliter. The age, as I mentioned before, was from 12 to 19, and that was included in the model as a continuous variable. And race, ethnicity was self-reported. There were four categories: non-Hispanic black, non-Hispanic white, Mexican American, and other. Weight was based on BMI percentiles, which has been mentioned here before. We used three categories, and this is based on the CDC guidelines. Normal weight was categorized as less than 85th percentile. At risk for overweight, which is synonymous with overweight in adults, was 85th to 95th percentile. And overweight, which is synonymous with obese in adults, was greater than or equal to 95th percentile. We included education in our model. Less than 12 years of education, high school, graduate, and college. We included income level, which is based on the USDA federal poverty guidelines. We also included urban-rural variable, which was urban areas were described as greater than 1 million in population. And we also had regional variables as well, which was based on Census Bureau data. The analysis that we performed accounted for NHANES complex survey design and included weight, clusters, and strata statements. Means were compared using t-tests and ANOVA. We created a logistic regression model with a dichotomous outcome of vitamin D deficient or not using the new recommendation. And when we created a multiple regression model, we did so manually based on the variables that were significant in the univariate analysis. The BMI percentiles were calculated using a SAS program that was provided by the CDC. So here are our results. So in this first slide, what you see is the overall mean age was 15.4. We had a sample of approximately 3,000 adolescents. The mean serum 25 OHD level was 32. If you look here, you can see that if we look by sex, there were differences by sex that females had tended to have lower mean serum levels of vitamin D compared to males. We looked by race ethnicity as well, and that was statistically significant. Non-Hispanic blacks tended to have the lowest mean serum vitamin D levels of all race ethnic groups. When we looked at weight, as weight category increased, we see that mean serum D levels decrease, and that was also statistically significant. When we looked at regional differences, we saw that there were differences by region, which was statistically significant. The lowest means were in the south, and that was actually sampled into winter. When we looked at urban regions, however, there was no statistical significance. When we looked at, When we looked at income, we saw that as income increased, mean serum D levels increased as well. As education increased, mean serum D levels increased as well. Wait, I'm going backwards in time to before I before I came here. In table one, we found that mean serum levels differed by race ethnicity. To explore this further, we adjusted for all the variables in the models and found that this relationship was essentially unchanged. As you can see here, non-Hispanic whites actually have the highest mean levels of vitamin D, and non-Hispanic blacks have the lowest, and this is after adjustment. We further stratified by sex to see if these differences would still persist and to see if there were any differences between males and females. And what you see is that the relationships by race still stay the same, but non-Hispanic black females actually have the lowest mean serum D levels after full adjustment. We also looked at the prevalence of vitamin D deficiency, since that was one of our goals. And prior to this, there really weren't any national estimates. And what you can see here is if you look at the overall, if we use a traditional cutoff of 11 nanograms per milliliter, we see that the prevalence is approximately about 2% in the national adolescent population. However, once we use the recommended cutoff, it approaches 15%. Non-Hispanic blacks were at highest risk. At the traditional cutoff, they were approximately 10.5%. At the new cutoff of 20 nanograms per milliliter, it approaches 50%. So this is a group that's an incredibly high risk. And some of the trends that we saw in table one, we also see here as well. Where's my mouse left the, here we go. We see that as weight category increases, the prevalence of deficiency increases as well. We see that females actually have a higher prevalence of deficiency compared to males, which is consistent with what we found in table one. So I'm gonna provide you with a summary of our regression results. This is after adjustment. Non-Hispanic blacks had 20 times increased odds of deficiency compared to whites. Mexican Americans were had an odds ratio of 4 compared to non-Hispanic whites. Thank you. Females were more likely to be deficient than males. Overweight adolescents had almost 2 times the odds of deficiency than normal. A 1 year increase in age resulted in a 10% increase in the odds of deficiency, and children of high school grads were more likely to be deficient than those with some college education. When we use a serum level of 30 nanograms per milliliter as our cutoff, which is the level that's considered optimal, the prevalence approached 48%. So in conclusion, race, ethnicity, sex, age, weight, and education were statistically significant predictors of vitamin D deficiency even after adjustment. We found that there was an inverse relationship between serum 25-OHD and weight, as I mentioned before, as the weight category increases, the prevalence of deficiency increases as well. We found that 1 in 7 adolescents may be affected, and 1 in 2 non-Hispanic blacks are at risk. Some of the implications are that we need to increasing dietary intake to improve CRMD may not be effective without a broad fortification strategy. At this point in time, adolescents really don't drink enough milk. It's difficult to get them to drink 2 glasses of milk, which provides 200 international units of vitamin D. Getting them to drink 4 glasses of milk may be almost impossible. Supplementation should be emphasized in some populations, particularly minorities and immigrants. And serum monitoring could determine the efficacy of supplementation and establish pediatric dose response curves, which are currently unavailable. The study of consequences of deficiency in overweight should be explored prospectively. There has been an association between vitamin D deficiency and the development of type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and cardiovascular disease. And we need to know whether or not which comes first, vitamin D deficiency or obesity, and how much of the two interplay together. So briefly, I have 3 brief slides, which are just graphics, which will sort of add on to what we've been doing. And what we really wanted to know after we did this research project was whether or not there was an increase in the prevalence amongst adolescents. And that information has recently been released from NHANES, so allowed us to do this study. So what we found is that if you look at our trends, let me see if I can move back, that in 1988 to 1994, the overall prevalence was about 14%, and at 2005 to 2006, it approaches 40% in the national population of adolescents from age 12 to 19. If you look at the black line, that black line represents non-Hispanic blacks. In 1980 to 1994, they were at 50%. By 2005-2006, it approaches 80%. We look at sex, the differences are still the same consistent differences that we've seen before. Females are at higher risk than males. And if we look at weight category, at each time point, as you increase your weight category, the prevalence increases as well. In 1988 to 1994, those who were at overweight was about 21% prevalence of deficiency in this population. By 2005-2006, it approaches close to 60%. Okay. So, in sum, these findings suggest that the prevalence of deficiency is increasing amongst adolescents and that the relationships between vitamin D deficiency, race, ethnicity, sex, and weight have remained essentially unchanged for the past 20 years. These results offer more evidence that vitamin D deficiency is an important and growing public health problem. An estimated 40% of the adolescent population may be currently vitamin D deficient using this new cutoff. The next question that remains to be answered is whether this cutoff should be applied to the pediatric population, and if it is, then a major public health education campaign will need to be initiated. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you. That's a very excellent paper, very interesting. How much of this deficiency do you think is due to lack of dietary supplementation or lack of physical activity outdoors and exposure to sunlight?
So it's a complex problem that's multifactorial, which is going to make it difficult to sort of tackle. One of the factors that you mentioned in terms of the dietary intake, it's estimated that approximately 40 to 50% of adolescents do not get sufficient vitamin D through nutritional or supplement sources currently. So what that means is that even what we have to do is actually create a nutritional initiative in order to attack that particular problem. As far as physical activity outside and outdoors, it's recommended that whenever adolescents or children are participating in activities that are exposed to sunlight, that they should be wearing sunblock. Sunblock actually, if it's applied appropriately, can prevent 95% to 99% of sun ray absorption. And that's what's required in order to produce vitamin D. So it's a big problem. Yes.
For me, I don't know much about vitamin D, but like working with obese kids and we've done like a weight loss group, I guess, like, how important is vitamin D compared to like all the other factors that, you know, the other presenters were mentioning too? So like I'm thinking, like, how would I communicate this to my kids?
Right. So here's the thing. The question is which comes first? The relationship between vitamin D and obesity is thought to be related to the fact that in obese individuals, vitamin D is actually stored in fat. So the heavier you become, the more likely you are to store the vitamin D in fat. But what's not known is whether or not the reverse is true. If you lose the weight, will your vitamin D levels suddenly go up? It's not clear whether or not that's actually the way that it works. The other problem is that, generally speaking, in obese individuals, their nutrition is probably maybe poor in some aspects. If they're not drinking enough milk, they're not getting enough dairy, then that's another factor that's going to predispose to A, obesity, and B, vitamin D deficiency. In addition to that, some of the soft drinks actually are high in phosphorus, and as a result, they sort of leach out calcium, and it's a complex other thing I don't want to get into, but it's a multifactorial problem.
Yeah, because there's the whole thing too with whole milk versus skim milk.
Right.
You know, so like I know there's like issues around that because that's also increasing.
Right. So adolescents sometimes prefer to drink whole milk as opposed to skim milk, which is higher in fat because of the taste. The other issue is that in some immigrant populations and some racial ethnic groups, lactose intolerance becomes increasingly prevalent as they become adolescents. So they may not want to drink milk for that reason as well. Lactate is maybe more expensive than the regular milk. So there's a lot of issues there. However, a simple solution is supplementation. Just take a multivitamin every day and you've solved part of the problem. And it's cheap. It's cheap.
This is a very timely talk because about 2 weeks ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics came out with a blanket recommendation to do just that. They took all the information in sum and decided that children and adolescents really aren't going to get that 400 IUs per day through their diet, nor do we want them doing it through the high-fat dairy products they would need to do to get that. So the current recommendations are to institute vitamin supplementation with vitamin D for all infants and children, other than those infants that are exclusively formula-fed and getting
right.
At least every 30 ounces per day. So you're right, it's going to take a big public health informational campaign to get that message out there, because if we try to do that one-on-one with patients, that's going to take
So here's the thing. One of the issues that I had with that whole review and the whole guidelines was that they accepted the 20 nanograms per milliliter as the level without knowing whether or not it applies to the pediatric population. All the studies have been done in adults, so we don't really know. Not to say that it's bad, it's just that this blanket statement comes out saying this higher level should be what we should be using without knowing whether or not it's really effective or appropriate for children. Number two, the prevalence of deficiency, they're not aware of what the national prevalence is, and are we really equipped to deal with this problem on this scale? In order to do so, my thought is that really national broad fortification of foods should really occur, particularly for those who are poor, who may not be able to afford vitamin D supplementation, and you know, et cetera. Thanks.
Well, thank you.